Today I want to talk about death, and I want to make a case for death. Since we're all going to experience it, I think it makes sense to talk about it and have a relationship with the idea, instead of considering it to be like the boogeyman in a closet or some saber-toothed tiger that, even though we don't know what it is, we need to avoid it. If you're in a life, or if a person recognizes that this life that they're currently experiencing is never going to get better, it may be time to let the physical life come to an end. So this allows the being, the spiritual part of us, to leave the physical enclosure, the body, and then to re-merge with, I'll call, all that is, all caps, all that is, back into God, back into divine consciousness. Since we're all going to die, and that means death really is an important experience in life, I think that really what we want to do is to be equal to it, and to remove all the energy of fear and the uncertainty about it. And certainly that fear and confusion about what death is has been marketed, and a lot of superstition about it, a lot of fear about it, a lot of misunderstanding about it, a lot of untruths about it. Bottom line is, we're each going to want to develop an understanding of it based upon our own level of awareness. Rather than take other people's words for it, including mine, we're going to want to investigate and come to some sort of an understanding about what death really is. I'm going to give you some opinions of mine. First of all, death is a change of state, with us going from being alive in a physical body to being alive in an energy body. And you'd go, oh, well, okay, that's not too gigantic a change. Correct. In some descriptions, this change of state has been likened or compared to us removing old or cumbersome or outworn clothing and taking it off and then being free from that. And life continues once we undo this physical wardrobe. When you think of it, we're taught to fear this one change of state, death. We're taught to fear it consistently. Now, we change states many times in our lives, I would say millions of times, actually, but we don't dramatize them all. Some of them we do dramatize. You know, we make a big deal about certain ones, right? We dramatize birth. We dramatize phases in education like, oh, the baby's going to go to kindergarten or going into high school or going to college or graduating from those different levels of education. We make a big deal of that. We make a big deal of jobs, getting them, losing them. We make a big deal of promotions that we get, promotions that we don't get. How about we dramatizing engagements and marriages? And we dramatize accidents and illnesses, other encounters where we exchange energy with people. We dramatize, oh, I met that really, really famous person. You know, I shook hands with the president or whomever. We dramatize that. But we don't dramatize these things. Most of us anyway. We don't dramatize getting up in the morning, getting dressed, getting in the car to drive to work, or driving to the grocery store. We don't dramatize that. We don't dramatize driving home, sitting down to watch TV, and so on. All of these are changes in state. Now, you recognize, as I just described that and said, we don't dramatize those. A lot of people dramatize driving to work, right? It's like it's like going to war for a lot of people. Going to work is like going to war for people. It doesn't have to be. But those people whose consciousness gets them into the state where they think they're going to war, of course, they're going to go to war. Why die? Why die? I think there might be a lot of reasons. Some good, some not so good. If growth is no longer perceived as possible by a person, death seems like, okay, no more growing, dying is next. Exactly. We recognize this as a part of the process of plants. So if you've got any plants, they're growing at this time of the year in this hemisphere. They're growing, they're growing, they're growing, they're growing. And sometime in the fall, perhaps, they're going to stop growing. If we're talking about plants that are annuals, then we go, an annual. Yeah, that's a plant that starts as a seed, grows, and then dies at the end of the season. The energy that sustained it ceases to flow to it and through it physically, and it dies. Oh. A perennial is a word that describes plants that live more than one growing season. They change state just like the annuals, but at the end of the season, they are not completely devoid of life force or their consciousness. Next season, under the right conditions, growth resumes. Some people are convinced that human beings are annuals. They believe that we start from a seed planted in fertile soil that leads to conception, and then we're born, we have a life, and then we die. At the end of life, after death, is Judgment Day, in which we, the spiritual being who is no longer in the physical wardrobe, is now getting rewarded with heaven or punished with hell based upon what we did or didn't do during our lifetime. This is kind of a dramatic pass-fail graduation ceremony. That's what they believe in. Most people, including me, don't believe that. Including Christ and Christ's returns reveal startling truth. He doesn't believe that. He believes in multiple lives. Edgar Cayce believes in multiple lives. The Bible, prior to the references to reincarnation being edited out at the Council of Nicaea, convened by Constantine, reincarnation was normal. Hindus believe in multiple lives. Buddhists believe in multiple lives. People from many religions believe in multiple lives. So that makes us perennials. And I'm going to phrase it this way, perennials with a purpose. Not just to grow, flower, but perennials with a purpose. I like that phrase. So what is that purpose? Let's see. Is it to see how much energy in various forms that we can acquire in our lifetimes? You know, is it to prevent other people, other growing things nearby from acquiring energy in various forms? Is it to prove, in whatever way we think is important, that we're better than other things growing nearby? Is it to grow our consciousness so we better understand our relationship with our source of being, our creator, our God, that power that gave us life? Is it that the purpose? And to understand and improve our relationship with other creations of that same power. Is that our purpose? Is the acquisition of energy such as money the purpose of life? The more I get, the more I get, my life is going to have more meaning. Or is the acquisition of material possessions? I got more cars than the next guy. I got more houses than the next guy. I got more shoes than the next guy. I got more hats than the next guy. Is that the purpose of life? Is it the acquisition of fame, power, or influence? Is it the pursuit of superiority over others? Is it to weaken others so that makes us more powerful in comparison? Or is the purpose of life the pursuit of equality, the reduction of suffering, the process of making humanity more whole, of making it one, of making the earth a suitable place for living things? Are those the purposes of life? People die because they think they can't succeed at playing the wrong game of life. What's the wrong game of life? The wrong game of life, in my opinion, is the game dedicated to acquiring. The right game of life is what I would say is dedicated to balancing the acquiring with giving being the first effective step in a purposeful life. Give, receive, give, receive. Sound familiar to the law of cause and effect that Christ talks about in Christ's Returns Reveal Startling Truth? Life in a universe in which the law of cause and effect, we reap what we sow. Even that sentence puts reap first, but sowing is what occurs before the reaping. Any farmer knows that. Do you know when things won't get better? Because maybe, that's a decision point for people to end a particular activity, to include life. But when things are not getting better, I think we can guarantee this is happening. We're using ineffective methods, we lack awareness, and we're not accessing sufficient resources. And you go, that pretty much explains struggle, difficulty, and so on. As a silly example, we know that nobody is going to call us today on a phone and ask us to fly to Florida to NASA headquarters at Cape Kennedy, Cape Canaveral, and help us repair NASA's shuttle. Oh, the space shuttle needs repair. They're not going to call us because we would lack everything needed to be effective in that project. We lack resources, understanding, everything, you name it. Do you know why an annual has a lifespan of one season and a perennial has a lifespan of more than one season? It is because the consciousness of those plants that is inherent in them will allow them to draw life only for a short period of time and then stop, or draw life, slow down, draw life, slow down, draw life, slow down. It's inherent in the consciousness of the plant. Why do some people think or live full lives of health, happiness, success, and then come to death complete, while other people live a life full of pain and struggle and illness, and then fearfully or despairingly approach death's door? It's because of their individual consciousnesses. That's the answer. The individual consciousness that you and I have is what allows us to experience life in whatever form that we're experiencing life. But it's not a fixed thing. It's not a given like it would be with a plant. We have the ability to elevate our consciousness. And that's the answer to this question. How do you want to change your life for the better? How do you do that? How does a person make their lives be better? How do we create more health, happiness, success? How do we contribute more on the planet? This is how. By working to elevate our consciousnesses. For those of us who believe, and I don't know how when you start thinking about it you can believe anything else, that the purpose of life is to elevate our consciousnesses, then these activities are what provide and produce health, happiness, success, the reduction of struggle for us and other people, and the reduction of suffering, and the advancement of our own being for the next growing season, the next lifetime in a physical body. If we see that we're going to repeat a physical experience after a given season, lifetime, it's like, oh, I'm preparing for the next lifetime, yes, and the next one after that, yes, and the one after that, yes, and the one after that, yes. We tend to think in really, really short terms. Christ thinks in terms of thousands of years, one millennium or couple of millennia. That's what he's thinking when to these ideas that he advances in Christ Returns gets adopted by people. Their awarenesses, their consciousness grow enough to be able to assimilate those truths. Well, he came 2,000 years ago, and we're still trying to make sense of it. A lot of people doing a lot of different things that doesn't seem like what he was talking about. That doesn't appear to be anything that he demonstrated for people 2,000 years ago. And people who say, oh, yeah, I'm a Christian, and I have to kill you because you're not. It's like, I don't recall him demonstrating that characteristic. The other day I listened to a recording of a world-famous physicist, Dr. William Tiller, and somebody asked a question about consciousness and human development. And he said, well, I think that's going to occur probably within the next 400 years or so. Right? It's like, oh, not next weekend, not in 2 weeks, not in a year, not in 5 years, no, maybe 400 years. It's like, here's a guy that understands how this cycle of lifetimes is working and can expand his view of life to recognize, oh yeah, there are a lot of different growing seasons, right? These cycles, these lifetimes, no big deal, this is how it is. It takes a long time for people to become conscious. And we are, it appears, taking our first baby steps. Lots of people die from despair or from trying to control others or using anger on themselves and other people. Those are lower awareness afflictions. It's not necessary. But if we think those are the tools to get it, if I'm despairing enough, somebody might rescue me. If I try to control others, I can get them to do what I want. They can make my life better. If I use anger like a cattle prod, maybe I can get people to do what I want. That's where my happiness is going to come from. That's where my health is going to come from. That's where my success is going to come from. No, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not. Our health, happiness, and success come from elevating our consciousness, not from other people. Lots of people will not let go of their interpretations and conclusions about their experiences from early in their life. Take life as being from conception to now. They dwell on events in their lives and what others did and what others didn't do. And all of that lower vibration rumination is like, it toxifies the consciousness. And certainly it toxifies the body. Illness and suffering are the results of that ruminating about bad things. We take an energy vibration that we don't like, and then we play with it and 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 play with it. It's like using Play-Doh, except it's poisonous. It's like, oh, at the end of the day, I played with that stuff a real, real long time, and now I'm sick. No kidding. No kidding. A lot of the whining is basically, my parents did this, or my parents didn't do this. They're all based upon the idea that physical comfort, satisfying our wants and our needs, were the highest priorities of us and our parents. And they should have been, but they didn't seem to be. Our parents didn't know everything I wanted should have been delivered to me when I wanted it. You know what? Here's a different point of view. What if our parents' jobs was to get us to reach out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and ask for enlightenment? That was job number one. If they could have been inspirational, if motivational, if they could have made our awareness such that we would reach out to divine consciousness and ask for enlightenment. Maybe that was their job. Maybe the purpose was, in our parents' life, to help us to advance spiritually, to help us to advance and elevate our consciousness, period. You go, oh, not to get me a pony, not to get me the coolest bicycle, not to get me the new sneakers every time I whined about it. They were trying to advance us spiritually. If we ask this question of ourselves, how did this experience, and you can fill in the blank there, encourage me to grow in understanding, to grow in awareness? We might be able to reduce our own suffering right there and our whining. It's like, oh, I wasn't a victim. I actually was being served in this event, in this experience. This energy exchange was actually feeding me on one level that maybe not physical comfort, maybe not, ego, but it was serving me? If we ask that question, we might be able to start hearing the answers to all the questions as we reach out. How did this serve me? How did this serve me to elevate my consciousness? If that's the purpose of life, why am I not focused on that? Why am I focused on all this other stuff? Why am I afraid of so much stuff? There's a Tibetan point of view that my sister Patty told me about. She had a book, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And that Tibetan point of view was this, that a person who is afraid of death cannot really live. Walking around in life worried about death and trying to avoid it, oh, this might lead to physical discomfort, and consequently, that could be the road to death. I got to avoid that at all costs. That's not really living. That's not much of a life at all. If we devote time to developing our own understanding, that's it. You don't have to take my word for it or anybody else's word for it. Reach out for this understanding. Ask for this enlightenment and come to terms with it in whatever way is appropriate for you. That's cool. That's exactly what you want to do. So if we devote time to developing our own understanding of this change of state, that's all it is, death, then we can eliminate all fear of it and recognize, oh, wow, now that I understand what it is, I can be free to fully create the life that is full of life, not full of fear, not full of dread, but I can create the life that gives me full expression. That's really what I want to do. Instead of looking over our shoulder, worried about death, or looking down the road, worried about death, or looking left and right, worried about death, now all of a sudden we're committed to looking for life. Whole different ball game. I recommend to people when they are approaching death, and this is a phase, of course, of life, when they're approaching this phase of life, that they travel light. I put that in quotes, travel light. Let go of the regrets, the guilt, the angers, the injustices, the fears, all the stuff, all the grudges we've been holding on to, all the I should have, I didn't, I wish I did, all of that stuff. If we let go of that, we'll be much lighter, because those emotions are very heavy. They're necessary emotions to experience, but only for a short period of time, not to be carried around for a lifetime, and certainly not to be carried into the next lifetime. We don't need to be doing this multiple times. Get complete. Lighten up about that. And the other aspect of traveling light is to recognize that when we make that transition, when we change state from being inside of a physical enclosure, the body, to being outside of the physical enclosure, the body, that we're going to perceive some form of light, and it is the brightest light that we're going to want to move toward. And we go, oh, but I don't deserve. Yes, you do deserve. Yes, you do deserve. Yes, you do deserve. That story about heaven, hell, and that punishment and judgment day and stuff like that, that was made up. That's all made up. And it doesn't serve anybody who is trying to elevate his or her consciousness. Better to understand this reality, that you move into the light, you'll have an opportunity to understand what occurred, grow from your experiences, and get ready for the next lifetime. It's like, oh yeah, oh yeah. Because if we hold on to that stuff, and we don't move into the light, we're basically keeping those negative emotions, those grudges, those bad feelings about ourselves and others in our consciousness, and then we're going to take them. We're going to take them in our suitcase, if you will, the suitcase of our consciousness, into the next lifetime, and we're going to start all over. Better to resolve them now before we go on this trip, on this journey, on this change of state. The annual plant dies because it stops drawing life into itself through its roots and leaves. Its consciousness is such that it just has this short cycle. The perennial plant, which lives on and continues to draw life to itself, is the one that we appreciate. It's like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. I get it. The person who dies or gets sick and then dies does so because he or she doesn't draw sufficient life force into their bodies, into their minds, from divine consciousness. It's up to us. It's up to us to continue that drawing of this energy that sustains us. Nobody else is going to do it for us. And when we think other people have to do it, I'm going to run to the doctor and hope they give me a tablet of life force. It's not going to happen. They don't have it. It doesn't exist in that form. It's within us. That spring exists within us. Think of the fountain of youth. It's within us. And that's where we draw from. The Christ within. The divine within. The kingdom of God. The kingdom of heaven. It's within. That's where I'm drawing it from? Exactly. And elevating our consciousness to appreciate, understand, and know how to do that, and be willing to do it, is what sustains our lives. Our consciousness is a part of divine consciousness. It's not separate. It's not distinct. It's a part. If I looked at a drop of water in the ocean, I would say, that drop of water is separate from the ocean. No, it's not. That wave is separate from the ocean. No, it's not. It just happens to be a form of expression of the ocean. We are a form of expression of divine consciousness. All we have to do is know it. And the way to know it is to dwell on it, is to meditate on it, is to pray on it, is to do codes on it, is to open up and receive this awareness. The person who lives fully does so because he or she continues to draw life from the divine. This is a straightforward idea. To live, you must continue to draw life to you from the divine. To die, you must refuse to draw life to you from the divine. Can't really be clearer than that. To die is not really a problem. If we're dying because we're complete in this lifetime and we're ready to leave in order to review our lives and to get ready for the next lifetime because we want to go on to that next adventure, that next journey, that next trip, that next growth cycle, that next growing season. That sounds right to me. But to die because we're quitting, because we haven't bothered to elevate our own consciousness, because we haven't continued to reach out to God, we haven't recognized that the solution to our problems is reaching out to the source of life, but instead we go, they didn't give it to me, or I shouldn't have done this, or I shouldn't have done that. Instead of doing that and thinking that's the solution, that's the way to health or happiness or success, is if we're not willing to shift our viewpoints about that, those essentially childlike points of view. And if we refuse to reach out and we refuse to listen to God speaking to us in one form or another, as the divine consciousness is trying to provide us growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within the system of spiritual law and order, the law of cause and effect, a.k.a. we reap what we sow. If we're not looking for evidence, we're not paying attention to evidence of that, we are ignoring evidence of that, then life is hard. Life is hard. And maybe that's where the statement comes, life is hard, then you die. Doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be hard. But if we take that point of view, that because it's been too much trouble, trying to reach within and understand this stuff it's so much trouble. We're quitting. To take the consciousness of a quitter and quitting into the next lifetime doesn't sound like a good idea to me. You put that in your suitcase of consciousness, and the next time you show up, it's like, what am I dealing with? I'm dealing with overcoming and shifting and healing this energy of quitting. I wonder where that came from. You packed it the last time. You didn't resolve it the last time. In the last growing season, when you had ample opportunity, you go, oh, wow, gee, I wish somebody told me that. We've been told that for at least a couple thousand years. And I guess we're going to be told for the next thousand or so years. But in the meantime, we have an opportunity to get it this time. I recommend this idea of setting an intention for the journey. You can do it. It's ultimately very practical. You set your intention for activities in life. I'm going to go to the grocery store in a little while. Okay, set your intention. What's your intention? Go to the grocery store, period. You can embroider that. You can be more elaborate with your description of the energies that go into that. No. I'm going to go to the grocery store. I'm going to make a complete list. I'm going to enjoy this experience. I'm going to enjoy the drive. I'm going to enjoy the interactions. I'm going to exchange high vibration energy with the abundance that I'm going to see on the shelves or in the coolers or in the refrigerators. I am going to exchange energy of a high vibration to all the people I encounter. I am going to make eye contact with them, validate them, smile at them, express my attention, respect, and appreciation for them doing what they're doing, stocking the shelves, being the cashier, answering questions, helping me find stuff. That's my intention. I am going to be this ball of high vibration consciousness that is going to brighten the energy of this grocery store, the drive over there, the highway, my car, and all the people who bump into my field when I'm there and when I walk out. That field of energy will stay and impact people's lives. And I'm going to enjoy my drive back home. And I'm going to love my experience as I bring in the groceries from the car into the house. There's an intention. There's an intention. You go, that's not how I do it. Some time ago, I had a client in Switzerland who complained about his drive to work. I said, why? He said, well, what do you mean, why? I said, why do you complain about your drive to work? You have a nice car, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, but new. So why do you complain about your drive to work? Well, you the traffic, you have to. He was a banker. Traffic on the highway is an indication of abundance. And if you're a banker, probably a good idea to have abundance around as compared to nobody has any money. Well, what do you do as a banker? Nothing, because nobody has any money. That doesn't seem to be workable. So we talked about it. He said, I thought you had to have these feelings about driving to work. I thought you had to have the intention of being unhappy at traffic. No, you don't. No, you don't. You can have the intention to admire the cars, admire the traffic, feel good about it, listen to whatever you want on the radio or a CD player or a cassette tape. You could enjoy it. You can enjoy it. You can make it a wonderful trip. You can balance your energy. You can get coherent. You could get all revved up for a day at work. You can make it wonderful. It's set your intention. Instead of setting your intention to be angry and upset and bothered by every single red light, green light, yellow light, and all the people, set your intention to enjoy it. You can set your intention before you go out to dinner. You could set your intention before you make a phone call. You could set your intention for your entire lifetime. And I talked about purpose, but if that doesn't resonate with you or you got a variation that's even more appealing, develop it. Develop it. And set your intention to align with that particular purpose. And you go, And you go, oh, that's cool. I can set my intention for death. Yeah, what is it? I think death is basically like going on a cruise, maybe a flight, maybe a car trip, maybe some other sort of journey. It's like, oh yeah, but the packing is going to be a lot easier. Exactly. Oh, but it'll be an adventure. Exactly. So, is death an adventure? It is, if we intend it to be. Is it scary as anything? It is, if we intend it to be. What is the difference? our consciousness, the amount of time we've devoted to getting our minds and hearts around this idea of death, which is such a fundamental part of life that everybody experiences it. So why should I ruin my life fearing something that's inevitable? Why don't I come to terms with it? Love it as a normal part of life, as an indication of changing from one season to the next season, one lifetime to the next lifetime. It's like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. It's no big deal. So let me prepare in this lifetime for my next lifetime. Most people understand that idea. In the summertime, people start canning fruits, right? Oh, canned fruits. And then certain vegetables, they're canning at this time of the year or in the fall, they're canning them, they're storing them up. Well, they're preparing for the next season. Next season after the summer is winter. You go, oh yeah. It's hard to grow stuff in a snowbank. And you go, oh, we do prepare for the future. The season I'm talking about is life and death. Two seasons. Let's prepare for that. It's not necessarily a scary thing. It's a normal time that we can get ready to have another physical experience. And our preparation and consciousness for it can make it wonderfully loving, so we continue to advance in our purpose of growing an understanding of our relationship to our Creator and the creations of our Creator, other beings on this planet. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is a pluralized version of letter 8 from the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, You are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask You to reveal the true reality of Yourself to us. We know it is Your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of Your presence within and around us. We believe and know this is possible. We believe that You protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express You. As we speak to You, we know You are perfectly receptive of us, for You are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask You to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into Your divine consciousness, and as we listen, You will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into Your care. Thank You. It is so. Amen.